ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. This is obviously not Stephanie Miller. This is Chris Lavoie, and we got Jim Ward here. Steph is speaking before a big labor convention in Orlando.
Steph's in labor? What?
What?
That's a newsflash.
Yeah. But in Steph's place, we do have John Fugelsang in our New York bureau. Hello, John.
Thank you. Where my mooks at?
Right here. Holla.
Great to be doing a bi-coastal show with you all, and good morning to Steph.
Hey, I didn't sign on for any of that pre-version.
Well, I'm very, very honored and pleased to be filling in for Stephanie. Of course, I could never fill Steph's shoes, but I do plan on wearing them if they bring the draft back. And it is such an honor to be here with the great Jim Ward and the brilliant Chris Lavoie. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, John.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to the Stephanie Miller Show. I promise you that this show will have everything you love about the Stephanie Miller Show without all that pesky Stephanie Miller in the way. We've got a great show lined up. We have Congressman Gregory Meeks from the great city of New York. He'll be calling in to talk about health care reform and the buck-ass bill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hello. We're going to be getting into that a little bit later on.
Are you guys excited about the buck-ass bill?
Yeah.
Do you own Aetna stock?
About as excited as Olympia Snow.
Yeah. I'd be a lot more excited if I did own Aetna stock or United Healthcare stock.
Mm-hmm. It's a good time to own some. Well, it's interesting. I do want to applaud Max Baucus because he has been the only person all year to bring Republicans and Democrats together in universal disdain for his bill.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. We're also going to have the Reverend Jim Wallace of Sojourners. He's going to call in later on this morning, discuss the need for more spirituality in the healthcare debate, which I'm very excited to talk about because I do think that we haven't really talked about where the Christian point of view begins and ends when it comes to caring for the sick, and some people haven't figured out what that means yet.
Yeah. Yeah, people like Max Baucus.
Exactly. It's a sad day. We have lost Mary Travers of Peter, Paul, and Mary. She was only 72 years old, and I'm sure everybody who can remember the 70s knows Mary and knows and loves their music, and it is a very sad day. On the upside, we're 6 days away from Bruce Springsteen turning 60.
Wow. No, really?
Yeah, next week.
Oh, my God.
Pretty amazing.
Wow.
I know. Billy Joel turned 60 last May, but he's compensating by trying to look 70.
Yeah. I was about ready to say he looks a lot older than 60.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Billy Joel and Springsteen were both born in 49 in the same year, but Bruce is kind of...
He's in great shape.
Still pretty hot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of straight guys that would cross over for Bruce to this day. And actually, I just got a copy of the most coveted bootleg for rock and roll fans and progressives. It's the Bruce Springsteen Billy Joel Obama tribute, Obama benefit show from last fall in New York City. They did a concert together for the first time in their careers, playing each other's songs and singing duets. So that's a good shout out to Bruce and a good shout out to people who have illegal concerts. And we're going to cover everything that's going on in the news this week. How are you this morning, Mr. Ward?
I had a very long day yesterday. I was putting together a demo of a lot of characters I do, many of which you've heard here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, right.
With the video and, you know, makeup and the whole nine yards. Tom Brokaw figures prominently.
Do you think you might be able to put that up on your website?
When it's all edited, yeah.
Awesome.
You betcha.
Okay.
Oh, fantastic.
Very
Maybe
cool.
You'll get to see it on the Stephanie Miller website at some point.
Yes. We will put it up there.
Brilliant. We're also going to have Eric Bollert of Media Matters come on to talk about all the accusations of racism from and against the Democratic Party. Jimmy Carter, of course, came out and said that, as you've heard by now, that a lot of these protests against Obama are motivated on racism.
What?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Just because they show a picture of him with a bone through his nose. Come on! That's just good, clean fun.
I'm sending out pictures of watermelons on the White House lawn. It's funny. Come on. Don't you get it? So Jimmy Carter actually came out and called it racist. I kind of feel for Obama on this because right away Obama had to dismiss it. And we heard the press secretary saying that these are not based in racism. And I kind of feel like Obama's in a very difficult position.
He is.
If he comes out and acknowledges the obvious, he's going to be accused of being a whiner. So
more
proof that a black man has to work 10 times as hard as a white man.
Yeah, he needs to stay above the fray, you know, and stay above the nastiness that's being hurled around below him.
Yeah, and I want to talk to Eric about this because I'm a fan of Media Matters and I'm a fan of the work they do, but I'm kind of thinking that maybe it's actually not racism. I do think that this is more of a tribalism thing. You know, I've noticed that with our Republican brothers and sisters, they don't mind black folks who talk and dress and vote and think like them.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fear of the others. So actually, I'm not even sure if racism's the right word for this particular kind of searing, irrational hate.
Throwing Oreos at Michael Steele, that would be racism. That's just uncalled for.
First off, let's talk about Michael Steele, because Steele's a... I've met Michael Steele. I did the Bill Maher show with him once. And,
really?
When he was lieutenant governor of Maryland.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fairness, you know, as we all know, Michael Steele is the GOP's great white chocolate hope. And he's really only in the GOP because, well, the Klan wouldn't take him. But Michael Steele, and we'll talk about this with Eric, because he is the one, I think, to have played the race card. Jimmy Carter didn't play the race card. He talked about the race issue.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Steele took that and then used it to his advantage and tried to smear Obama with it. And that's called exploiting race, and that's playing the race card.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, that's just the way I roll, baby.
No. Oh, getting jiggy with the GOP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know me.
It's a beautiful thing. So, and we're going to talk about Acorn as well, because Acorn, for those just tuning in, is the most evil source of terror in America. First, they try to help poor people, which is bad enough. But now, of course... they're under fire now because some employees were caught on camera appearing to advise a couple posing as a prostitute and pimp. They were lying about the woman's profession to get housing help.
Mm-hmm.
And these Acorn staffers, off the record, not knowing they were being filmed, said, well, you could, you know, say this is your place of residence, say you're a consultant. They were trying to give them tips to help their pimp and hoe enterprise.
Right.
And so now funding has been frozen. And Acorn is a very misunderstood program, a very misinterpreted program as well. And so I want to find out from Eric Bolaert of Media Matters what exactly the grievances against Acorn are, because they have many, and they seem mostly to be full of crap.
Mm-hmm. Well, they tried to do the same thing with Planned Parenthood, this sting operation get people to say things, to smear the entire organization, to find one weak link in the chain, you know. It's... And unfortunately, it was a UCLA student who was partially behind that.
And also, apparently, on some of these videotapes, they caught one woman admitting that she killed her husband or something like that, one Acorn worker. Turns out that wasn't true.
Yes, it's actually kind of brilliant. It seems like Fox News got punked, brothers and sisters. And it's a very funny story. On September 15th, Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, the guy who looks like Flintstone on steroids, they both broadcast this assertion by this woman who worked for Acorn named Tressa Kalki. I do hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She was recorded on a hidden camera as well. See, in lieu of finding solutions for our country's problems, what you do is strap on a hidden camera and go in and try and get Acorn staffers fired. And these people went in to secretly tape this woman in an Acorn office. And apparently she realized that they were conning her, and she began just saying outlandish things and saying that she had killed her ex-husband and murdered him and got away with it. So this was reported as fact. This may shock you, but Hannity and Glenn Beck apparently don't have fact checkers.
Huh. Nah, yeah, they could have made a simple phone call to the San Bernardino Police Department to, you know, see if something like this had happened.
That's what real journalists do, though.
Yeah. That's what real news organizations do.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Beck said he played this clip, and then he said she never spanked her kids, but she did shoot her husband dead. And then I think he weeped a bit. Sean Hannity said, specifically now, she goes into the scenario about her husband and the killing of him. And the next morning on Fox, Gretchen Carlson said she killed somebody. Despite this, some lawmakers want to keep funding the group. And apparently, the woman was just realized they were putting her on.
Yeah,
put
their
them
chain.
On. Mm-hmm. So if you're working in an Acorn office and somebody funny comes in with weird padding in their clothing, make up a lot of stuff and make them look silly.
Claim to be a Martian.
Well, I think a lot of us first heard of Acorn last fall during the campaign when we heard about voter registration fraud.
Right.
And apparently what happened there was Acorn hired some people to go door-to-door and get people to register to vote. And the people they hired, some of them didn't want to work, and they wanted to defraud Acorn, so they just did the voter registration forms with dummy names, Mickey Mouse, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So Acorn got screwed on that by the people they hired. See, Acorn's like the Bush administration. They hire a lot of bad people, only Acorn fires them when they get caught. And what happened was the right wing took this and ran with it. Voter registration fraud became voter fraud, became election fraud.
Yeah.
And people still think Obama may have stolen an election because of Acorn, when in reality all that happened was Mickey Mouse was registered and didn't show up to vote.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. If you're not registered, you can't show up to vote.
Well, you know, it's amazing because right now it's sort of a scary time in American politics. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day in my country where the average Republican has to prove that he's not a total penis, and the average Democrat has to prove he has a total penis.
Yes.
And that's sort of what we're dealing with right now. You're never going to go broke telling people who want to hate who to hate. And the great joy of Fox News is watching them get the lunatic fringe riled up on a regular basis and, you know, always do their bidding. So I'm looking forward to talking with you guys, Ed, with Eric Bollert from Media Matters about that brilliance.
Right. And we'll talk to our listeners about that, too. 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12. We are still taking your phone calls, even though Steph isn't here and John is in New York City.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Lavoie. Lavoie, if you're French.
Please,
we want to know what you guys think about everything we're going to talk about today, from health care reform to the Baucus bill to the accusations of racism and reverse racism. By the way, isn't reverse racism technically just
racism.
Being nice to people?
Oh, okay.
Well, yes.
Right?
Yes, come to think of it.
It would seem to be. And, you know, likewise, everything that's going on right now in the news, it's not just Kanye anymore.
Yeah, Kanye was good for one day, and we're like, okay, yeah, that's over.
I know. It's really amazing. Did you guys watch Jay Leno?
Who knows?
Yeah, it's on way too late. I go to bed at stupid o'clock and get up at insane o'clock. I can't stay up that late.
Apparently there are five people watching now. No, that's three.
Well, no, it went down to, I guess it dropped 40%.
Yeah,
from day one to day two.
Yeah, 40%.
40%. Get the read of money from that. You know, I've never touched my Tonight Show money. Never touched it. Never touched it once. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm
Even
looking forward
you're not
to
watching,
seeing.
We'll make more.
I'm looking forward to seeing if American workplace productivity rises now that we're all going to bed at 9:59. But Leno did really well at his opening. I want to give him credit for that. He had a great opening night. In fact, his ratings were so good, NBC's already looking to replace him with Conan O'Brien.
Yes.
Well, he did have Jerry Seinfeld on the show, and I was doing stand-up in New York on Labor Day at the great Gotham Comedy Club, and
uh-huh.
Right before I went on, I was headlining, and they came in and said, hey, Jerry wants to go up and do 20. And I'm like, well, if Jerry's going to be my opening act, so be it. And
yeah.
He went up and did his whole set that he wound up working out on Leno, so it was a lot of fun.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and I have to say, I'm really thrilled to be guest hosting the show. I don't really know why you had this lapse in judgment that you would let me do this.
Well, we love having you, John, it's about time to take a break right now, but give us a call, 1-800-STEPH-12, that's 1-800-STEPH-12. We'll be right back with your phone calls and more about Acorn right here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That laughter sounds like the result of misbehavior.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And you're listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. Steph is in Orlando giving a big old speech before the labor union convention there. But we have John Fugelsang in New York, and we have John calling in from Chicago. John, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing good, thanks. Have you guys made note of the fact that the same conservative Republicans who are really quick to make a connection between the behavior of a few, you know, the misconduct of a few Acorn employees and the overall administration of Acorn, and, you know, to damn Acorn in a more broad sense, are the same conservative Republicans who are incapable of realizing or making a connection between the behavior of people who committed abuse of detainees at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, but mm-hmm. for some reason they couldn't see any connection between the behavior of those, the misconduct of those individuals, and any sort of institutionalized you know, policy of bad behavior. You know, it's interesting they're willing to make one leap and damn Acorn, but they weren't capable of making the leap and saying, hey, maybe we should look and see if there's something institutionally wrong with our treatment of detainees.
John, I think you're right, except for one thing. I don't think they fail to recognize the difference. I think they choose not to recognize the difference.
Well, yeah. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, quite willingly. And it's really interesting that, you know, these are the people who were against Clinton's morality and gave us Bush. And they're the ones who are saying that torture is acceptable, despite Ronald Reagan signing a ban on it. And you're very right, and it's a very apt comparison to make, that if a few Acorn staffers, or there's a few rotten apples in the Acorn basket, it must be the fault of the top, and yet they refuse to make the same distinction with Bush. It's terrific, and it's almost like you're implying that some people on the right are hypocrites? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, I guess that is what I'm implying. You are absolutely correct.
Oh, John, I'm sorry you hate America so much. See, what you have to learn, John, is if you don't like Republicans, you hate America. They're synonymous with each other. And these are the people, again, you're exactly right. But they're not just refusing to make the link between the people doing the torturing and the people at the top. They're defending that in many cases. They're actually, they're against Acorn and they're defending torture.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for your call, John.
From their point of view, though, it's they're bad people, so they deserve to be tortured. It doesn't matter what we do to them because they're, by definition, bad people because
exactly
they're being
right.
tortured.
But, you know, one area where I think the progressive left has really dropped the ball is in fighting them on the morality of torture itself. I do believe in bringing up the fact that Ronald Reagan did sign a ban against torture and that we also sent people to 15 years of hard labor from the Japanese Army after World War II for waterboarding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Although it's not very PC to say this, but guys, seriously, waterboarding, great for the pores. I mean, it's like a colonic for your face. I'm opening a salon in Beverly Hills.
And your lungs.
Yes, and your lungs.
But you know what? I think a lot of people on the left have been cowed into submission of standing up against torture because they don't want to appear to be weak on terror. And if you're against doing the wrong thing, you're against terrorism and torture. It's not a very great leap to make, and I can prove it. Jim Ward, do you watch the show The Hills?
No.
Well, I think you do. I think you love The Hills.
Okay.
I think you admire Spencer and want to help him and aid and abet him any way you can. Now, I can torture Jim until he agrees that he likes The Hills.
That is true.
All that proves is that Jim said it under torture. It doesn't prove Jim likes The Hills.
Or has ever watched it or knows what it is.
Exactly right. Spencer is still evil. He's still a douche. He's still the ultimate evildoer. But it doesn't prove anything except I tortured you into confessing you like him.
Mm-hmm.
And there we go.
And the FBI knows for a fact that you just get bad information from torture. There are other more sophisticated techniques to get people to talk.
Yeah. Ask John McCain about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, ask Dick Cheney about it. He told us for months that we would see, once these documents were declassified, Dick Cheney promised us all we would see how enhanced interrogation techniques led directly to valuable intel. Exactly nothing.
Exactly.
Playing with the words. It turns out that the detainees who experienced enhanced interrogation techniques were the ones who gave the intel. It just wasn't because of the enhanced interrogation techniques.
Exactly.
Because we treated them like humans, and they cooperated.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back here on The Stephanie Miller Show with more of your phone calls.
Stephanie Miller.
Now, please, let's hold off on the cursing until happy hour.
You're listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie is not here today. She is in Orlando giving a big speech to a labor union convention. But you've got me, Chris Lavoie. You've got Jim Ward over there. And you've got John Fugelsang in New York City.
There. Thank you. I prefer to think of myself as the guest host czar.
That's right. And we've got Jonathan in Pennsylvania on the line at 1-800-STEPH-12. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, yeah, it's so hilarious that these people will be like, oh, Acorn's so bad, but then when Vitter hires a prostitute or Craig happens to do a little bit too much feely-feely, they're like, oh, no, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, now, first of all, Mr. Craig got to do no feely-feely, okay? That's the tragedy of that story. He went to all that trouble in a men's room stall and didn't even get any company for it. And yet, but you're exactly right. Senator Vitter, this is the guy who came out and said that single-payer health care was evil. And he's going to the D.C. madam talking about family values. He thinks that single payer means an unmarried guy in the whorehouse. But you're right. These are the people who are teaching us about morality.
Yeah, and it all goes along the same lines as Cheney sending everyone else to war when he got, like, what, like five deferments?
Mm-hmm. Five, yes, he did. He got five, and Rush Limbaugh got out for anal cysts as well.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, that's the whole Vietnam thing. People still want to pillory Bill Clinton for not going. Bill Clinton was opposed to the war, and his number never got called. He said if it was called, he would have gone. And I have no problem with that. I have a problem with guys who supported the war mm-hmm. and avoided going.
Yep.
Limbaugh, Phil Graham, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, they were the hell no, let someone else go guys.
Right. As long as all they have to do is sign a paper, as long as they don't have to pick up anything or actually run anywhere, they're fine with it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, the chicken hawks. And
yeah.
They have no problem sending someone else's kids to die. And these are the same guys who were all draft dodgers back during Vietnam. They have no
yep.
credibility. And it's a failure of the left, in my opinion, to remind Republicans of this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because they always go like, oh, no, we don't want to be seen as this or we don't want to be seen as that. When, you know, their neighbor's kids are going off to, you know, basically possibly not come back.
Yep.
Exactly right. And you know what? It's not being anti-Republican or anti-troops. It's being anti-hypocrisy to call
right.
people out on it. Let me ask, how do you feel about Obama increasing troop numbers in Afghanistan?
Well, I mean, basically, unless we have local support, I don't see how that's going to end up any differently than Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. I think you're exactly right. It's looking like Vietnam with camels. And I don't know how they think they can out-thug or out-bribe these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we have some sort of weird addiction to repeating our history. It's like, we didn't learn anything from the past 40 or 50 years. Let's just do it again.
Well, and then that's not uniquely American. I mean, humans in general never learn from their own mistakes, and human history is a long cataloging of repeating the same errors over and over again. But it's really, really painful to see Obama doing all this. I kind of think the way to solve Afghanistan is just legalize opiates
mm-hmm.
in America.
Well, yeah, and you could also try, like, mentioning something like Wikipedia.
How so?
What?
Yeah, just to look things up. I mean, if they're so stupid or so whatever that they can't understand, you know, what the history is, just say, hey, have you ever tried Wikipedia?
You look it up. Wikipedia is French. You look it up. I don't think that's going to do any good. You know, telling people to go find the facts on their own, they're just going
right.
to rebel against you. You have to just give them the facts and
mm-hmm.
just say, I respect your point of view, but the guys you're supporting are hypocrites, and here's why.
Well, that's the thing with these, like, these birthers, these people carrying around these signs. I think basically what happened was the GOP sent out these notices, these emails, like, hey, do you have anyone that's illiterate and can't read but can yell really, really loudly? Because we need them here now.
It's really true. I call them the illiterati, the newest branch of the Republican
yeah.
Army. And it's really true. For some reason, the mean, ignorant, angry, loud wing of the Republican Party has gotten all the hype this summer. And these people are being, you know, led. They're being guided that way. And the birth certificate is a perfect example of that. That's died down a bit. But there's a lot of powerful Republicans who are going to have to answer for going along with those rumors. Chuck Norris came out just 2 weeks ago and said, I'd like to know why the president won't show his original birth certificate. You know what, Chuck? You want to know why? Because the state of Hawaii went digital in 2001.
Yes. Yeah.
There are no more paper birth certificates in the state of Hawaii where he was born. They're all online now. Why don't you produce your original hair?
Well, he still has that on his back.
Oh.
His chest. I
saw. Why don't you produce proof of an
right.
acting class, Chuck?
All right. Deshaun in Brooklyn is on the line. He used to work for Acorn. Hey, Deshaun,
welcome,
how are you?
Deshaun.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good to hear your voice.
All right. Listen, I used to work for Acorn before I went to law school. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something. They had it out. The right wing had it out for Acorn since the last election. And Acorn, I can tell you for a fact, does do a lot of good in the community, especially for minorities. They
mm-hmm.
do. They get a lot of minorities who are fairly apathetic, basically apathetic, and they get them out and get interested in doing stuff. Now, a lot of the stuff is very small scale, okay? But what it was, and see, here's the thing, and don't get me wrong, you do have a lot of what I call lazy organizers because Acorn, because it is a community situation, they don't pay their organizers a lot of money. I got paid a pittance, but here's the deal. What it was is you have a lot of lazy organizers that do stuff like they were doing in the last election. They were sitting around here not, you know, doing their jobs because you have to bring in numbers for Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get paid and that's how you stay on your job. So what happened was you had these lazy people not doing stuff, so the right wing goes and harps on it and says, oh, look at them, they're such a dirty organization. Well, what it was is Acorn kind of, I guess you can say, had kind of like turned a little blind eye to it because they were getting the numbers. The problem with it was that the way the Republicans are beefing for now is because they see somebody who can match them for their little, what I call dirty tactics, and now they're mad. What they want to do is they want to keep minorities from getting interested in the vote. That's why.
Yes.
Because they know typically in this country, even though the black and the black community only represents about 13 to 15% of this country, they don't have enough props to put a president, a African-American or minority president in office, but they can turn the tide of an election against a progressive candidate. In other words, if you got like Bush and Kerry, who are basically even matching an election, if you get a lot of black turnout, yeah, who you think is going to get in there? Because blacks are usually more sympathetic to progressive and democratic candidates. That's just the history. Now, I want to say this, and the thing with Jimmy Carter, he spoke truth to power, because when I was in law school, I lived down south, and I never saw, and then don't get me wrong, you got racism everywhere in this country,
right,
in the north and the south, east, west, but in the south, it is way more prevalent. I was never called the
way more prevalent or way more in the open?
Oh, way more in the open. I mean, there were certain parts of, and I used to live in Arkansas, there were places in Arkansas that they told me, you may disappear if you go to this town.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what happens is that the South has come a long way. Don't get me wrong. It has come a long way in the last 20 to 25 years, but you guys have got to look at something. We're only really a generation and a half out of the Civil Rights era.
Okay? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
so a lot of these races are still around. They're up in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they are a majority of the voting block of the Republican Party. So what has happened is Jimmy Carter said, look, he said, yeah, it is a lot more prevalent in the South. Look at the numbers when they did the – in fact, I was watching Hardball last night. Look how they did the numbers on the amount of voting. They said overall Barack Obama got 43 to 46% of the white vote overall, but look in the states in the Deep South where he only got 10% of the white vote, 11% of the white vote. Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, I think he got 12. So people that sit around here saying, and of course Obama's going to say it's not about race, because look, you guys are right. There's a lot of legitimate criticism from Barack on the left. That is the thing. There's a lot of people can say we don't agree with his Afghanistan policy, you know, but these people sitting around here saying, well, he's a socialist because he's putting out this debt. Most of them people don't have any clue of economics, period.
Exactly.
All they're doing
right.
is parroting what they hear from the right wing.
Well, let me ask you, don't you think that they'd be coming, the right would be going at him just as hard if he was a Caucasian Democratic president? I mean, isn't this really a repeat of what we saw with Bill Clinton for 8 years? It just they have the added bonus of the fact that he's half black.
Well, here's the deal. They have a thing against anything that is progressive. And, you know, I have so many people that sit around here and say, well, I'm proud to be a conservative. Well, here's my thing. What is so honorable and noble about being a conservative? Because here's the truth. There are certain things, even in my old age, I've gotten a little bit conservative about, but overall, I consider myself middle to center left. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, conservatives have fought against the abolishment of slavery. They have fought against the voting rights for women. They fought against marriage for couples. They fought against gay rights. They
the five-day work week?
Five-day work week, labor. They
getting rid of child labor?
Thank you. They fight against anything, one, that is any big business, and they fight mm-hmm. against anything that doesn't comply to their narrow view of what the world should be. And my thing is, what is so honorable about being a conservative? There's nothing. Liberals have blazed the path in this country for the last 200 years for everything that has moved forward in this country.
Exactly, and true. And that's how it is. That's how it is historically nationwide. But progress takes a really long time. You know, black folks were property over here for hundreds of years. We got rid of that in the 1860s, but then we had essentially legalized apartheid in our country until 1966.
And whenever their state decided to act right.
Well, yeah.
You know, and let me say this in closing. I know you guys got a lot of callers. I went to Texas not too long ago, and I went to a friend. We went out to lunch, and this was in Argyle, which is just outside of Dallas, okay? And there was a place down there. They served the greatest fried chicken and country, and that's the only thing that's on the menu, fried chicken and country fried steak. Now, you know, naturally, the crowd is very mixed. Dallas is a big, what I call integrated, very diverse area. And
I'm half Southern. We love fried chicken, too.
Oh, yeah. And they went into, we went into this building, and the guy said they have the best chicken around in Dallas. Okay, so we went in there to eat, and one of the guys who, you know, is one of my partners, he said, you know, look, he said, you know, if you go back to the bathroom back there, they have a bathroom that says coloreds only. They have it listed from the old segregation era. Now, here's the thing.
The good old days.
Right, from the good old days. Now, here's the thing. Half, 60% of the people in there eating were black. Now, this is the thing. If you think it was reversed, okay, and the black, it was a black-owned business, and it had something in there that said whites only and blacks only, do you think that you would have that much diverse customer base still going into that place and giving it business? Black people are very forgiving. Black people are very forgiving and understanding, even when we get slapped in the face. And my thing is, why Republicans, who are supposed to be leaders of the people, we lead, we speak for this group of people, why are they not saying anything when they got these people at these rallies sitting around here equating Barack Obama to a monkey, or sitting around here saying he's Hitler? Here's my thing. So you're telling me now Barack is Hitler, but Hitler, when you think of Hitler, you don't think of socializing, man. You think of exterminating Jews and waging
exactly
war.
Right.
And, so you're telling me that the best comparison you can give to Barack Obama is one of the most evil men in the 20th century? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, and that's not going to go. That's not going to go away. And that's why every time you hear someone compare Obama to Hitler, you've got to come out and remind them, sorry, Hitler was right wing. You know,
right, yeah.
Like when liberals compared George W. Bush to Hitler, I'd come out and say, you know, Hitler was democratically elected. It's not fair.
Yeah.
And it's no different right here. But you bring up a very, also when they bring up National Socialism, that's why Hitler belonged to the National Socialist Party.
Well,
so you'll hear a lot of these teabaggers coming out and saying, he's a National Socialist. Socialism, the kind of thing Hitler was, National Socialism was a completely fascist ideology. But you bring up a good point about voter suppression of black folks. Let's not forget that George Bush Sr. voted against the Civil Rights Act and tried to stop motor voter, which would automatically register anyone to vote as soon as they got their driver's license. It's all about keeping the vote down.
Absolutely. 1-800-STEP-12 is the phone number. 1-800-STEP-12. We'll be back with more of your calls on Acorn and the like. Right after this break, right here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Are you having a party or something?
Non-stop.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Listening to the Stephanie Miller Show with John Fugelsang in New York City, filling in for Stephanie Miller today. I'm Chris Lavoie, and Jim Ward is also here. Coming up after the top of the hour, be sure and listen for Reverend Jim Wallace of Sojourners. He's going to be talking to us about the need for more spirituality in the debate on health care reform. And that's something that I know you're looking forward to, John.
I really am. I'm a big fan of Sojourners. And whether you're consider yourself a Christian or a former Christian or agnostic or anything, it's worth your time to check it out. Because in many ways, I think the great hope for this republic and for the world is if the Christians started acting like Christians. I'd like to see Christians take a break for just a while from worshiping Jesus as a god and try this thing about following his teachings.
Absolutely.
To me, I'm kind of gobsmacked to see all these Christians fighting so hard to deny care to the sick. It is such an abdication of everything that Christ talked about. And my background, for those who don't know, I am the child of two ex-clergy. My mom is a former nun, and my father was a Franciscan brother. So I grew up admiring Jesus the way any guy admires mom's first husband. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was a strange childhood to have, and I've come to view Jesus in much the way I view Elvis. I love the guy, but his fan clubs freak me out. And, you know, saying healthcare is socialism, I mean, it's not very PC to say it, but you're not going to find a bigger socialist than Jesus, my friend.
Exactly.
The guy didn't own personal property. He said, pay your taxes. He said rich people couldn't go to heaven. Yes, he did. He never once charged a leper for a copay. You know, you got to imagine Jesus trying to explain to Lazarus that death was a pre-existing condition. Psych. And even into the illegal immigration drama with health care, it's a bit discouraging for me, and I do want to ask the Reverend about this, how it feels to see a Democratic president and Republican congressman arguing over who wants to deny health care to undocumented aliens the most.
Yeah.
I don't know when being a Christian became a point of having pride at turning people away from emergency rooms, but that's kind of what we've come to. And in a way, I think it's one of the reasons why people don't take Christianity seriously, yep, by and large, in this country. It's right now, organized religion is the leading cause of atheism.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, me being the official atheist of the Stephanie Miller newscast.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, my feeling is that God is too hip to ever join one of his own fan clubs.
Yes.
So, you know, I do believe, and this is a conversation I have with Bill Maher all the time. I was a regular on Bill's show, and it was on PI, and it was a wonderful show to do. I was on it over 20 times, and I got to debate like Jerry Falwell when I was 25. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Because for me, I was very excited, and Falwell's there saying, oh, he's pro-life. And I got to say, yeah, well, Reverend, you support the death penalty, so technically you're pro some life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the debate I always have with Bill is, please don't confuse God with his creepy fan clubs, you know, and don't equate spirituality with people who are mean because Glenn Beck told them to be, and they cloak themselves in this air of respectability called Christianity. They're no more Christian than people who are mean or racist can be liberal. You know,
right.
It's just by definition impossible. So I'm really glad that we're going to be having Reverend Wallace on. Sojourners is a dynamite site. I guess you'd call it a progressive Christian site and magazine as well, but you'll get points of view there you don't get in the mainstream media. And what they're doing this week and what he's coming here to promote is Sojourners, the Christians, are leading the battle against bearing false witness this week.
Mm-hmm.
Reverend Jim Wallace has gotten this campaign going where progressive Christians or anybody will write to different right-wing talking heads and explain to them why they as Christians support health care and why they're wrong about the facts. It's all about bearing false witness. Now, that's a popular Ten Commandments. And I always find it amazing that people who want the Ten Commandments posted in courthouses don't bother to read them. And what we're hearing a lot about Obama is lies, and about the health care plan is lies, from the death panels to socialism to the birthers. And so on Monday, he had everyone write into to Limbaugh. On Tuesday, they all sent things to Sean Hannity. Today, the Reverend is having people write emails, thousands of emails, to our friend Steve Ducey from Fox News.
God.
Can he read?
You know,
I don't know.
Today's it's Ducey. It's Ducey Thursday.
Yeah.
And,
oh boy.
You know, I've met Steve Ducey. I've been on his show a bunch of times, and I don't know what propels him. And my last name's Fuglesang, so I shouldn't make fun of guys named Ducey. But I'm having a hard time. I'm going to ask the Reverend for some spiritual advice on how to keep my anger in check when it comes to deuce bags.
Yes.
It seems odd that you have to apologize for being a progressive Christian as if that were oxymoronic in some way. You know,
yeah, and it's what? Not. It's not at all. I mean, when I was, you know, I've said this on the show before, but this Jesus we speak of was a peaceful, radical, nonviolent revolutionary. He hung around with lepers, hookers, and crooks. He never spoke English, was not an American citizen, was anti-capitalism, totally anti-death penalty, anti-public prayer, Matthew 6:5, look it up, but never once anti-gay, didn't mention abortion, and was a long-haired, brown-skinned, that's in St. Paul, brown-skinned, homeless, Middle Eastern Jew. Yeah. In this country, that guy couldn't get a job at House of Pancakes.
Right. That's right.
There'd be no room at the IHOP. And that's why I've started a new nonprofit for Christians who want to deny health care to the sick. We're prayer against care. And what we say is that real Christians ignore Jesus. I don't trust anything he says. Really, you don't need Jesus to be a good Christian. We're better than him. Jesus was anti-violence. He was anti-death penalty. He said people should pay their taxes. Why would any Christian follow a man like that?
Absolutely.
I think his real name's Jesus.
Hey, that's right.
I think you're right.
Against care.
He's an illegal alien.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be talking to the Reverend Jim Wallace of Sojourners right after the top of the hour here. Give us a call, 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12. John Fuglesang in New York City filling
in. Some Republicans to call in, too, huh?
Yeah, we love Republicans. Love
we
to
do,
talk to
just
you.
Not who they vote for.
Exactly. We'll be right back here on the Stephanie Miller Show with the Reverend Jim Wallace.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Oh, I'm walking on
Stephanie Miller Show, and as you can tell, I am not Stephanie Miller. I am Chris Lavoie, and over here is Jim Ward, and in New York City, filling in for Stephanie Miller, is John Fugelsang.
Good morning, kids.
Good morning, and right at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Eric Bollert of Media Matters for America. It's going to be a live edition of Right Wing World. He's going to be talking about accusations of racism against President Obama, and Fox News smearing Acorn. So that'll be interesting. That'll be right in about a half an hour. But right now on the line, we have Reverend Jim Wallace of Sojourners. Hello, Reverend Jim Wallace.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
And, hello, Reverend.
Here's John Fugelsang.
Reverend, it's a pleasure to have you here. In the last block, I was talking to the folks in Radioland about Sojourners and the magazine and the website and how valuable it is, whether you're a progressive Christian, conservative Christian, or even agnostic, just to get a point of view that you won't get in the mainstream media. I've been a reader and a devoted follower for a long time. Thank you. I'm the child of two ex-Catholic clergy, and I really feel like you're doing the Lord's work, and I think that you have a ministry that is more vitally needed now than perhaps ever in our nation's history. But we're having you here today not just to thank you for your good deeds, but to talk about this Tell the Truth program that you're doing this week. And since it's a Deucey Thursday, I thought I'd let you explain what you're all trying to accomplish.
Well, thanks, John. And certainly, if we're talking about the Lord's work, it's clear from the scriptures that when we bring health and healing to people, we're doing God's work. It's central to our vocation in the faith community is healing. And so, well, this week we're doing a campaign to tell these talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity that they're pulling the country away from the moral core of this health care debate. They should have learned in Sunday school that telling the truth is important, and apparently they haven't learned that. So we're doing this week a ministry of truth-telling where thousands of Christians and others, people of goodwill, are sending emails to Sean and Rush and Glenn Beck and others and saying, you know, what you're saying really isn't true. And here's the story of a real-life person who shows what you're saying isn't true. Sean Hannity said that in this healthcare system, we're going to have a government rationing body that tells women with breast cancer, you're dead, it's a death sentence. And so we tell a story of a woman who had her breast cancer surgery stopped and halted because she had a pre-existing condition of acne by her healthcare company. So we're confronting these distortions. They're really distorting the facts. As you know, out there people are confused and they have fears, and that's legitimate. This is complicated. But then there are those who are preying on the fears and confusion by deliberately distorting the facts. And so truth is important. Jesus said, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. And Obama said, we're going to call out these people when they lie. So I'm not sure you expected the faith community to call them out, but that's what we're trying to do all week. And sojo.net, it's sojo.net, is where people are can read these emails and can sign up to a truth-telling ministry this week with some of our nation's talk show hosts.
Exactly right. If you go to sojo.net, you yourself can send emails to Hannity, to Limbaugh, to Ducey, and to Glenn Beck, and let them know that they are distorting and that they are, by definition, bearing false witness, which is a phrase Obama used in his telephone address to progressive Christians a few weeks ago. Reverend, why do you think so many people who want to put the Ten Commandments up in public buildings refuse to take that commandment seriously?
Well, I think there really is a broad consensus in the faith community that health and healing are central to us. And, 46 million people don't have health care insurance. And those who are covered, as you well know, a lot of those folks, and we tell their stories, they're not getting the coverage they need. They can't afford it. They find that when they get sick, they're not being covered, and health insurance companies are going out of their way to make sure sick people aren't being covered. It should be the other way around. So I was on a call this morning with a journalist who said, you know, the ministers have to start speaking out. So we have resources for ministers and churches. Here are the facts. Here are the questions being asked. And we're encouraging, I got a call today with a lot of leaders in the churches about encouraging them to preach about this. not to get into the partisan weeds, the churches shouldn't say we support H.R. 224 and we're going to fight for this amendment. But the moral principles, you know, that too many people are left out and left behind, that should motivate us here. And I think, you know, it's time we took all those commandments seriously.
Reverend, did you ever think you'd see so many Christians in our country devoted to denying care to the sick?
Well, the truth is that you know, a lot of the hospitals are run by churches and denominations, and a lot of us have to take care of the people who fall between the cracks of this broken system. So we have a real interest in all this, and I think when people in the name of religion end up saying there is no, like Limbaugh says, we don't have a health care crisis. Well, he just didn't hear the story of the young boy we told him about, who had clinical depression, a young man, my board chair's nephew, and didn't get coverage and he died. And so we want to make sure that the faces we see every day out there in the country, in our parishes, on the streets, those faces are really in front of the American people. And that's our job, to focus on the faces, not the details of policy.
I think you're very wise in putting it that way. I know a lot of people want to feel more connected to their faith. There's many Americans who were raised Christian and over the decades and throughout adulthood have drifted away from any kind of organized faith, in many cases because they're very disillusioned with the fact that a lot of American Christians are just mean, and that Christianity in America has really gotten a bad rap by a very loud, cruel minority. What can progressives do to help save their faith in this country?
Well, I think you're right. It is a minority. And two things I would say. I always like to say when I'm out with Stephanie that religion has no monopoly on morality. And so a lot of folks listening may not be people of faith, and that's fine. Or they may have had a bad experience with religion. I got kicked out of my church at 14 over the issue of racism in Detroit, so I know that experience. But I think the good news is that a new generation of young believers of all faith traditions is coming of age, and they don't have the old baggage. They don't think there are only two moral values, issues, abortion and gay marriage. Poverty is on their agenda. The environment, creation care is on their agenda. Healing and health are on the agenda. War and peace, they're worried about the escalation of things in Afghanistan, for example. So I think the good news is that we're finally breaking the grip of the religious right, and it's now clear they're a minority, a loud, vocal minority, but their time has come and gone, and their own children are leaving them. So a new generation, I think, wants to say that social justice is at the heart of their agenda, because these are things that break the heart of God. These stories break the heart of God when people are not healthy and they're sick and they can't afford good health care. It shouldn't be for profit. Health should be for people and not for profit. Jesus was the great physician, and he healed everybody, rich and poor alike.
Now, why was Jesus so against profit, Reverend? What was his problem with making a buck off of healing the sick?
Well, you know, he overturned the tables of the money changers in the temple because he was saying they were focusing on profit, not serving people. And so I think that we had a conference call organized by the faith community. President Obama came on the call about a month ago. We had 140,000 people on that call, and 300,000 listened to it afterwards. And, you know, it was talking about the ethical, moral core of this debate. And the president spoke to that again last week and invoked Ted Kennedy. And he said this is about our character as a nation. What kind of people, what kind of nation do we want to be? And that's the right question for us to be raising in the faith community.
Your Tell the Truth campaign is devoted towards knocking down a lot of lies that we've heard. My dad is a former Franciscan brother, and he lives in northern Florida now. He's in his 70s, and he got so tired of hearing his pastor and seeing the church bulletin talk about how federal funds will be used for abortion that he finally made an appointment with his church's pastor, went down there to meet with him, and gave him a copy of the Hyde Amendment, which was passed in the 70s, which guaranteed that federal funds could and would never be used for it. And I was pretty proud of him for doing that. And I think, do you believe that a lot of times seniors are really the ones on the front line in this battle?
Well, I think it's good, you know, good for him. They ought to be in the front lines because they're the ones who are at the center of this debate. But he's right. I mean, that is a lie being perpetuated by a lot of people. And there was confusion in some of the House bills about all that. So that's why it was important that the president said clearly the other night that federal funds are not going to cover abortion. That's current law. That's precedent. And the truth is pro-life and pro-choice leaders on both sides of the abortion debate have agreed that this health care debate is so important, it can't be derailed by controversy and debate over abortion. Abortion should be off the table here. Let's talk about that in other places and times. But so the president made clear that the current law will apply. There'll be strong conscience laws here and no federal funding of abortion. And both pro-choice and pro-life people have agreed to that principled agreement for the sake of health care reform.
Well, let me ask you a question that's kind of sticky for many Democrats as well as Republicans. How do you feel, Reverend, when you see a Democratic Christian president debating with Republican Christian lawmakers over who wants to deny health care to undocumented aliens the most in this country?
Well, to be honest, many of us would not care if people are documented or not if they're sick, and you know, we serve those people at our clinics and hospitals, and so you know, I would go much further than the White House has gone in taking care of people who are sick. Whether they're documented or not is not the first question we ask in the faith community. It's is this a child of God, and are they sick, and if they are, they get taken care of. So I know that politically, that's not going to happen in this this round of health care reform, but at least we shouldn't hurt immigrants further than what they've already been hurt. We've got to take care. The Bible says you take care of the stranger. In your midst, Jesus said, I was a stranger. And so how we take care of the stranger is really how we take care of him. So that's one place where we'd be stronger than so far the White House has been on caring for immigrants, legal immigrants for sure, but even undocumented. That's not a problem for us.
Yeah, it was the Good Samaritan, not the Samaritan who declined a claim.
Reverend Wallace, we thank you so much for joining us this morning. And
great to be on the show.
It's sojo.net, correct?
Sojo.net.
Sojo.net. You can sign up for the Truth Ministry, the Tell the Truth Ministry all week, and write letters to those lovely talk show hosts you've always wanted to have a conversation with.
Yes.
And Reverend, from the moral point of view, it is wrong of me to make fun of Steve Doocy's name, right?
Oh.
I make fun of his facts, not his name.
Exactly.
Okay. Bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend Wallace.
All right. Take care.
Okay, you too.
Thanks for taking Jesus back from the Pharisees.
Absolutely. We're going to be taking your phone calls about this very topic. 1-800-STEPH-1-2. That's 1-800-STEPH-1-2. John Fugelsang is in New York. Jim and I are back here in Los Angeles filling in for Stephanie Miller. We'll be right back here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Facts with Slag Whistle. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
What if
Stephanie Miller
was one of us?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie is in Orlando giving a big old speech to a big old union convention. She'll be back here tomorrow, but we've got John Fugelsang in New York City. I'm Chris Lavoie, and that is Jim Ward over there. And John, what do you say we do some stand-up news here?
I am so ready for some stand-up news.
Are you sitting down?
Yippee.
Hey, it's time for stand-up news. And now, here's anchor person, Stephanie Miller.
Not quite.
I'm Stephanie Miller.
What?
Huh?
What?
I'm now, just kidding. I'm just John wearing your shoes.
Fuglesang.
John Fuglesang.
Thank you. I'm going to throw it over to Mr. Ward.
Yeah. Well, first up in Stand Up News, Rod Blagojevich keeps saying that he has done nothing wrong. In an exclusive Newsmax interview, ousted Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich insists the accusations against him are completely false, and he says he would not accept a plea bargain, even if it meant he escapes a prison sentence.
I think he mentioned something about the truth being mutilated.
The truth being mutilated? Oh, wonderful.
Oh, nice. He's the grift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, here's Rod Blagojevich.
The truth has been mutilated. My reputation has been slaughtered. The office I was elected to has been hijacked. My good name has been held down on a pool table and repeatedly and violently raped with a broken pool cue.
Oh, God!
My career has been taken to a back alley and beaten to a pulp with a Louisville slugger and had its face slashed to ribbons with a straight-edge razor before being thrown on one of them, whatchamacallits, the thing they have at the dry cleaners, you know, the steam press, while a 300-pound guy named Stosh sits on top of the lid. So whoever's in it comes out looking like a waffle, a big bloody screaming waffle with third-degree burns on what's left of its face, a waffle that makes its own syrup, all because some nosy people have decided there might be corruption in Chicago politics. Pshaw, balderdash, and poppycock. And anybody who says otherwise, I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burned to the ground. I'd be careful about where you get your suits pressed if I was you. Unless you like it with nice sharp creases and hunks of steamed meat hanging off them. Just saying. Hey, get some tomato, celery, salt, and some bright green relish. You got yourself a nice little snack.
Oh, God. And that'll do it for Stand Up News. We'll be here all week. Tell your friends.
Blissfully.
If you'd like the Chicago way.
Watch the Chicago way.
If you'd like to hear more Jim Ward Falderall.
Jim Ward's apocryphal, but true. How do you spell that? Who cares? Go to the tile at stephaniemeller.com. Press it. Go buy the album.
That's right.
He pulls a knife, you pull a gun.
If you don't, it stinks like a whorehouse at low tide.
I'm imagining you wearing a Blagojevich wig when you do that bit, Jim.
I do, actually. Say.
He looks like Bob's big Blagojevich up there.
Yeah.
Bob's little brother, Blagojevich.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's take a really quick phone call here. Betty in Albuquerque wants to talk about Christianity. Hi, Betty.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks so much for this discussion this morning.
You said you saw a bumper sticker.
The bumper sticker. My favorite, Gandhi, and he couldn't have said it better. I like your Christ. However, I do not like your Christians because they are so unlike your Christ.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a very good point, Betty.
I think it sounded better in Hindi. I think
it was more poetic
in the translation.
Yeah, can you get Ben Kingsley to quote that?
Yeah, exactly. All right, Betty, thanks for your phone call. Yeah, coming up after the bottom of the hour break here, we're going to be doing a little bit of a live right-wing world. Eric Bullard from Media Matters is going to be on with us, and he's going to be talking about accusations of racism against President Obama.
Shocking.
Yeah, especially in light of what Jimmy Carter has been saying. And also, he wants to talk about Fox News in the business of smearing acorn.
What?
Mm. Yeah, well, the people who hate trees are now trying to squash acorns.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we'll be taking a little bit of a break here, coming back with Eric Bullard of Media Matters. John Fuglesang is in New York. I'm Chris Lavoie. Jim Ward is over here. We're filling in for Stephanie while she's in Orlando. She'll be back tomorrow. Be right back here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Why don't you dip yourself in flour and make a sky biscuit?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. You are listening to not Stephanie Miller, but it's me, Chris Lavoie. John Fuglesang is in New York City, and Jim Ward is sitting here right next to me here in Los Angeles. And right now we have a kind of a live right-wing world. We've got Eric Bullard from Media Matters for America on the line. Eric Bullard, how you doing?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, and here's John Fuglesang.
Welcome, Eric. It's a pleasure to have you on while I'm taking over the asylum for the day.
There you go.
I'm really happy to have you on because today, next to the Baucus bill, I think the biggest story in the blogosphere and in the media, next to the Baucus bill would have to be about the accusations of racism from President Carter and the pushback we're seeing from the right, led by the great white chocolate hope Michael Steele.
Right.
What's your take on where things are at right now with the race debate?
Well, it's interesting. The right wing, the noise machine, claims it hates any discussion of race, and it hates it when people play the race card, and yet they've spent an awful lot of 2009 doing it. You know, look, Jimmy Carter was claiming that, Congressman Joe Wilson, there was racism at play when he shouted, "You lie," at Obama during his congressional speech. And, you know, I leave that to Jimmy Carter. I mean, he grew up in the South. He claims he thinks he's able to detect certain behavior and certain code, and he's from that culture. So I'll leave that to him. It's tough for people to assign motivation, but you can't look at anything that the right wing has done in regards of Obama and not realize none of it comes from a vacuum. I mean, the whole birther nonsense. I mean, that to me clearly had racial overtones. Glenn Beck going on TV and saying Obama has a deep-seated hatred of white people. Mm-hmm. So this Carter's comment didn't spring from a vacuum, and I don't think there's any question that if you look at the overall attacks on Obama from a right this year, race is playing a part.
I think you're right. We were talking earlier about how Michael Steele was the one to actually play the race card here. Jimmy Carter brought up the notion of racism. It was Michael Steele who's now trying to force Obama to refute Jimmy Carter, and he's trying to push Obama into a corner. Obama's in a tough place because if he comes out and says, yes, it is racism, he'll be perceived as whining, and so he's got to be right. 10 times stronger than that. But I would like to ask you, don't you think we'd be seeing just as much hysteria against a Caucasian Democratic president as we're seeing against Obama right now?
That's a good question. And, I never thought we would see, I was writing a lot about media and politics in the 90s, and I never thought we'd see anything like the completely unhinged response to Bill Clinton's election. You know, he murdered Vince Foster. You know, he was running drugs out of MENA, Arkansas. These conspiracy theories just went on for years and years, and tens of millions of dollars spent investigating him.
And the more Clinton moved to the right and adopted the right's ideology, the more they hated him.
And so what's interesting with Obama is it's like 0 to 90 in like 2 months. They were at their Clinton level of hatred like March of 2009. So that shocked me. And everything since has shocked me. I just continue to be shocked. He's a Nazi. He's a racist and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, here's the ultimate irony. If we go back 12 or 14, 15 months ago during the Democratic primary, there were lots of Democrats saying, well, you know, we can't elect Hillary because if she's elected, the right wing will go crazy. You know, it'll just be, you know, all this yelling and shouting. And you know, of course, Barack Obama wins in a landslide. And I think the reaction has been probably more unhinged than if Hillary Clinton had been elected. So,
well, especially considering that Hillary has done so much to become accepted by the right in the past several years, and many Republicans like her just fine at this point.
Yeah, I think what's happened is, you know, the McCain campaign, once the McCain campaign sort of exited the national stage, and once sort of the adults left the national stage on the Republican side, just this massive vacuum opened up, and Fox News and Michael Savage and all these people rushed into it. And there's really no adult supervision anymore. So that's why I think it's just, you know, it did go from 0 to 90, and now they're just sorting, you know, they have to just, like, top themselves every week. So,
yeah.
You know, for especially to me, the real signal was when Limbaugh jumped on the Obama's a Nazi bandwagon. I mean, to me, that was a clear case of Limbaugh playing catch-up to Fox News and things like that. And then, and having to top themselves, he's going to indoctrinate your kids when he talks to students about staying in school and things like that. So
yes, we all know that presidents should never speak to school children
unless they're
reading to them while the nation's under attack.
Yeah.
what's frightening is, you know, we've still got, 39 months left in this first term. And God only knows where this is going to go. I mean, the level of hatred is unvarnished. And getting back to the original point, when anyone brings up race, the right wing goes crazy, and yet they can't stop talking about race.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's why I wonder if racism is even the right word anymore, you know, because we were discussing earlier how a lot of folks on the right have no problem with black folks as long as they dress and talk and vote and think like them. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe it's more an issue of tribalism than racism, the fear of the other. There's a lot of folks out there who don't go around hating, but they're not used to feeling inferior to a black guy. That's a new thing for them. And I don't know how much of it's motivated by hatred and how much of it's just plain old xenophobia.
It's a good question. I think it's one big toxic stew. We'll never know if this, if we had a white Democratic male senator, who became elected president, would this all be happening?
Last time that happened, it was Kennedy, and they went after him.
Yeah, but not with this, the noise machine that's cranked up to 11 every day that they have now.
If they'd had Fox News back in the 60s, they would have gone after JFK hardcore.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you go back and think of the Dallas assassination. I mean, Dallas was a real hotbed for the John Birch Society. Kennedy was a communist. Kennedy was sort of giving away almost the exact same rhetoric.
We're in nut country now.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Except Obama's a Nazi communist. That's what I like.
A Nazi communist fascist.
He hates
racist.
Himself. Yeah. He's at war with himself. Well,
in so many ways.
Growing up, I always thought there were the three core, because we said earlier, I like Republicans, just not who they vote for. And growing up, we always had the three core groups of Republicans. You had your Wall Street guys, your golden calf worshippers. Then you had your conservative Christians, who do tend to worship Jesus, because that's easier than following his teachings. And then you have your third group of Republicans, just guys who really like Tom Clancy books.
Semi-libertarian, sure.
Right on. But now we've got this new group that I call the illiterati, the angry, mean, loud, vocal group. And they're becoming, in a way, the new face of the party. And I'm wondering, who are they serving? Like, how does the Republican Party profit from these people becoming the most visible faces in them?
Well, we'll find out in 2006. I mean, we'll find out in 2010. I mean, that's the real question,
But who's pulling the strings on all this? I mean, they're being used to rally the base by Fox News and
No, Hendrik Hertzberg has a good little piece in the New Yorker this week saying there really is no Republican Party anymore. There is no Republican leadership. That's what I was saying, when the McCain campaign ended and those sort of traditional adult Republican professionals that it ended, there is no adult supervision now. So it's all driven by Fox News and talk radio. I mean, Fox News is clearly the opposition party to the Obama White House. Obviously, we've never seen, quote-unquote, a news organization transform itself into a purely political partisan entity. But that's obvious what's happened. So, Fox News is driving all this. They are the opposition party, and the Republican Party now sort of orbits Fox News and the Republican noise machine. We've had a complete inverse. Conservative media used to, of course, orbit the party. That was always the traditional format. It's been inversed, and now they sort of play catch-up to whatever Glenn Beck is saying.
But it's working, isn't it? Fox News' ratings are through the roof.
Yeah, it's working in terms of the cable universe. I mean, Glenn Beck gets 3 million. That's huge for cable news. Of course, it's a country of 300 million. Oh, but there's no doubt the ratings are up. Look, I think there was a reason Michelle Malkin created this fantasy that there were 2 million people in Washington over the weekend. They want to think this is a mass movement. Instead, look like there was probably 60,000 or 70,000 who showed up last weekend. And so that's why we really won't know until 2010. Is this just sort of an extremely loud, extremely small minority, or is there something much bigger and much more troubling for Democrats going on?
You're right about them inflating the numbers of the protest this weekend. It's always funny how the real teabaggers think the nuts are much greater in size.
Yes.
Yeah.
the rap on Jimmy Carter has been for the last couple of decades that he's a great man who was an ineffective leader. But I once saw Coretta Scott King speak at New York University, and she said that she believed that had Carter been reelected in 1980, race relations would have been exponentially improved in this country. And that he really was a real champion of civil rights. Why do you think we don't see more Democrats siding with him right now?
Oh, just the whole topic of race, and I think the Gates story over the summer scared people off that might normally, particularly politicians, that might even be willing to talk about it. You know, Democrats, for whatever reason, think there are a whole bunch of issues they can't talk about. National security, and race relations is certainly one of them. Gun control. I mean, they've just convinced themselves that they're on the losing end when they're probably not. So I think they're just very nervous, and they see these, you know, they saw the town hall mini mobs this summer and convinced themselves that that was really, you know, what America was thinking. So, there's very little leadership on that issue anymore.
Well, Eric, it's a pleasure to meet you and to have you on the show. Eric Bollaert of Media Matters for America.
If
you enjoy this interview, make a copy of it and send it to Bill O'Reilly's office. He'll appreciate it.
And go to Media America, MediaMatters.org.
There you go.
Yes, absolutely. For more on what Eric does over there.
We didn't even get to acorns. I hope you'll come back and talk about acorn with us.
That's a whole nother. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Eric. All right, we'll be right back here on the Stephanie Miller Show. We got John Fugelsang in New York City. We got me and Jim here in Los Angeles. We'll be back with your phone calls. 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12.
And we'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Ella. Ella. Ella.
Ella.
Ella. Ella. You're listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. I am Chris Lavoie. Jim Ward is sitting right next to me here in Los Angeles. And John Fugelsang is in New York City.
Greetings. I'm here to publicize my new book. It's a self-help book for uninsured people about Glenn Beck. It's called He's Just Not That Into You.
Yes. All right. We got Louie in Buffalo on the line. Wants to talk about MSNBC and Fox News. Hey, Louie, how you doing?
Well, yes, it's Willie, but that's okay.
Hi.
Used to the left-wing distorting the news. Anyway, I just want to say that I listened to your last segment. I'm a moderate. I'm not a hardcore Republican. I listen to your station. I listen to MSNBC, and I listen to Fox. I really am a moderate. But you are presenting such an unbalanced view of the news presentation. MSNBC is far more virulent on the left than Fox News is on the right.
Okay.
And somehow that balance I never hear you guys mentioning that.
You would call them more virulent than Fox News, really?
Keith Olbermann is far more virulent than anybody on
Fox
News.
Sure, he has a point of view.
Yeah. Well, Keith Olbermann, I wouldn't call him a liberal. I would say Rachel Maddow's a liberal. I would say Keith Olbermann. A lot of MSNBC are Democrats. Like, I don't consider Fox News to be conservative at all. They're pro-Republican Party, not conservative values. Would you agree with that?
Well, certainly Sean Hannity has become a shill for the Republican Party. But the thing is, if you're going to criticize Fox News, there should be a balance there. Keith Olbermann is very virulently left.
Hang on a second. I wouldn't say he's virulently left. I would say he's virulently anti-Republican, and I would say he's Democrat. I wouldn't call him a liberal per se. I think Rachel Maddow is their main liberal over there. But
right,
I'm an independent. I watch Fox too, and I listen to Air America, and this is progressive talk. So, you know, I would submit to you that we are every bit as fair and balanced as Fox News is. We're just not pretending to be.
Right.
Well, yeah, the other thing is...
How do you respond to that?
Do you
agree with that? I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? We are as fair as balanced as Fox News. We're not pretending to be like Fox News is.
I know. I understand that. The only thing I would suggest, though, is that it's not the ratings that make Fox News a better station. I mean, anybody can get ratings. You go out and shout in the street and a million people will listen to you.
It's the electric guitar, right?
Yeah, right. But the point is, though, that the news media is just as balanced. If you look at all the different stations, the networks, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, I do not see the imbalance. I mean, you've got far right people, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, but I don't see the imbalance that you're talking about. And I think that when you talk about it, talk about Fox News in isolation, you're actually distorting what really is going on.
Well, first off, you brought up the imbalance with your call, but I would submit to you that the media in general, people like to say the liberal media. I don't think the media is liberal or conservative. The media is biased towards profit and ratings and money. And it's not red or blue, it's green. And the media is every bit as liberal as the corporations that own them. You will not see any news station that will ever be anti-war. The next time we go to bomb a third world nation of brown people, you won't see any anti-war activists. You won't see Noam Chomsky or Howard Zinn anywhere, but you'll see retired generals saying how we're going to take them out. I think that these are very fluid terms that are ever shifting. And this is a progressive talk station. This is an alternative for people on the AM dial. You can flip your radio around and you will find a lot of stations.
Oh, that's the point I'm making then, sir. That is the point that I expect better from you guys, seriously.
Really?
First of all, I was against the war in Iraq. I've talked about virulence. I was virulently against the war in Iraq.
God bless you.
2,500 kids killed. But I expect, that's the point I'm making. I expect more from you guys.
What kind of balance would you like a progressive talk show to have? And do you call Fox News and ask them to have progressives on as well?
Actually, if they
had
a phone
lucky?
Thing, I would. they don't have a phone in.
Oh, they do.
They do have a phone number.
They do, but all the receptionists are on the air now.
Yeah. Actually, I might do that, but you guys at least have the phone in. They don't. But I'm expecting more from you because you're supposed to be sane. You're supposed to be adults. And when you
more
paint
what?
Something...
I'm going to ask you to be specific now as to what we did that you didn't like, and I'm going to ask you to be specific as to something we've done in this broadcast that has not been balanced or honest.
After all the gatherings of the unions, of Acorn and everything else,
the gatherings
of Acorns,
the protests, the union gatherings, everything. This thing on the last weekend.
Well, I'm sorry, you're being. I'm gonna stop you. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What union protests?
What I'm saying is, you guys are adults. And the progressive movement needs adults. And
I agree.
That's what you guys are. Stephanie, for all of her entertainment value, she's also an adult. When you criticize Fox News, at least bring in the fact that it is one of many different flavors.
We criticize all kinds of...
And I'm going to point out to you, sir, that so far in this broadcast alone, we have criticized Obama on his health care proposal, on the mandates to buy insurance, we've criticized Obama on the Afghanistan troop buildup, and we criticized Hillary Clinton's pantsuits. So that's pretty balanced.
No, the Afghanistan move thing, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's no choice on the other stuff. And that's another thing, is that you should realize... Again, you're the adults. You should realize that he has no choice on the healthcare thing.
Okay, Louie.
Neither will we, it's all even
thanks.
Out.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to one more Republican. We always put Republicans at the front of the line. Larry in Chicago is on the line. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing fine. I'd like to talk about this religious aspect of the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
Please do.
I'm a Presbyterian, and when I go to church, our pastor says a prayer for our president, vice president, Congress, that the Lord gives them both wisdom, strength, and courage to lead our country righteously and to end the two wars we're fighting. He doesn't talk about, abortion or give money or this or that. He's doing the Lord's teachings of peace, righteousness, and salvation. And Jesus came down, died out on the cross, shed his blood to wash away the sins of the people. And you're a Christian when you use your faith by grace and believe in all of his teachings, you're saved. Now, as far as...
Well, I would say it goes a bit further. It goes into putting his teachings into practice, not just believing.
Yes, he does. The Lord did not... God hates hypocrites. That's one of the things. If you're going to be a Christian... You have to follow all of the Lord's teachings, all of them. And I know you're not going to be perfect because we're all of the flesh. But one thing I read out of the Bible, and it's in all four Gospels, it says, judge not, lest ye be judged. and with what judgment you use, it'll be done on you. It's not paraphrasing.
Sure,
thank you, Larry. That's true, and it's good advice for Simon Cowell as well.
Absolutely. We'll be right back on the Stephanie Miller Show. We've got a full other hour.
Thanks
with
for calling, Larry.
With John Fugelsang, and next hour, be sure and listen for Representative Gregory Meeks, Democrat from the great state of New York, on health care. We'll be right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. No, I am not Stephanie Miller. I am Chris Lavoie, and Jim Ward is sitting right next to me here in Los Angeles, and we've got John Fugelsang filling in for Steph, and he's in our New York City Bureau.
Thanks, guys. Can I just say at this point, I'm afraid the dead celebrity Oscar montage is going to add about 2 more hours to the show.
You're right. Hello.
I think this year's Oscar is going to be one long dead celebrity montage with a mini montage of awards being given out.
I think someone said on Twitter that 2009 is shaping up to be the year that everyone you've ever heard of has died.
Everyone dies.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're alive, fire your publicist.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12. We've been talking about a lot of great stuff this morning, and we'd like to hear from you.
Yes, important things, like Kanye West. by the way, MTV apologizes for Kanye's outburst, but they assure viewers at no point were the VMAs in danger of being relevant. And I was very comforted by that. They have to dance on rock's grave. They don't have time for rudeness.
Oh, God.
They're too busy destroying music in America.
No, that's true. Although there were some pretty good performances. I don't know if you saw Taylor Swift's performance on the VMAs.
No, I actually missed that.
It was amazing. She started out looking like a busker in an actual subway station, and then she got on a subway and sang while the subway was moving to the Radio City Music Hall station. And then she got above ground and sang in the middle of the street. It was actually technically a masterpiece.
Was she lip syncing?
No.
Really?
No.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually a really, really good performance.
Well, I guess the irony is that Kanye's out. You know, if she had won it, people would have just said, oh, okay, white girl, go you. And a lot of people wouldn't have heard of her. And this has helped her career immeasurably this week. So God bless Kanye West and his lack of a filter.
Exactly.
He's already helped Taylor Swift and Jay Leno.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy time. You know, we've been talking about the healthcare debate all day. And really, the public option, which we're hoping stays alive, they're still saying that the public option will hurt insurance companies. Now, saying the public option is going to hurt insurance companies is like saying community college hurts the Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the public option will cost approximately $1.2 trillion over 10 years. Iraq's occupation, $2.4 trillion over 10 years. Cost twice as much. Which one's going to save more American lives? And what I want to know is, why are the people who want to spend all this money fighting terrorism to protect American lives so resistant to using the money for health care to protect American lives?
No,
if
that's
you're a
different.
Patriot, you want to save your fellow Americans.
Yes, but you can't shoot back at disease.
Oh, so that's right. There's no guns in healthcare.
Yeah, there's no games that can come out of the healthcare thing, you know, computer games. So
it's
not nearly
point.
As entertaining.
You're right. Thanks, Jim.
Plus, there's
now.
All those benefits from fighting the Iraq War, such as...
With the oil revenues, the war paid for itself. Oh, no, that didn't happen. Well, the greed is liberator. No, that didn't.
No.
But we're bribing the warlords better now, and that's a good thing.
Oh, that's a plus.
You know, well, I feel the same way about Afghanistan. We had this Republican caller earlier, and I was happy to point out to him that, you know, liberals are really coming down on Obama, and I think that, you know, attacking Obama from wherever your ideology is what it's all about. And there's a lot of progressives and conservatives alike who think that Afghanistan's going to be Vietnam with camels.
On the other hand, if we pull out and then there's another attack, guess who gets the blame for it?
Absolutely. So he's stuck no matter what. And the problem is, you know, Alexander the Great couldn't conquer Afghanistan. The Soviets couldn't conquer Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're trying to, you know, our military is doing a terrific job. But
a
lot of it's bribing warlords.
We created Al-Qaeda to throw the Russians out of Afghanistan. And that didn't work out so well.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We have this mentality, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So when we hated Iran, we armed Iraq, and that blew up in our face.
Right.
We didn't like the Soviets, so we armed Afghanistan. That blew up in our face. We keep getting in bed with the wrong people, folks. We are Brittany with a flag. And it's we need a better foreign policy than this. But I just think if it's a patriotic duty to protect American lives, then it's a patriotic duty to save them with health care. We need less homophobes and more HMO-ophobes.
Yes.
The public option is just the O'Douls of health care. It's this watered-down version, single-payer, which would be the socialist thing they're all warning us about. That's what we need. It's cheaper in the long run, and really, it's one of the first times in my lifetime I've seen a president try to do something that's long-range economic intelligence. You know, this is the number one cause of bankruptcy in our country is inability to pay health care costs. I would put to you that Obama is the conservative on this because he's looking to save money long-term.
Well, that's a very good point. But this monstrosity that Max Baucus introduced yesterday.
Oh, the Max tax. Really, really sad. And I don't see where it's going to go. Now, you pointed out earlier, Chris, that earlier this summer, Senator Chris Dodd put forth his own proposal.
Right.
What's the name of his committee?
Oh, boy.
It's the Committee for Labor and...
it's like four different things, and yeah. I don't have it in front of me right now.
But
I think we're going to have a rumble earlier, with the Gang of Six.
I'm not sure. Well, Chris Dodd put forth their own. So
okay, it's the Senate so Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. That's what it was.
The question is, if we wind up having no public option in this bill, will people like Nancy Pelosi throw it under the ambulance? Now, Nancy Pelosi has taken a lot of ribbing from me this year. When the whole torture information came out and we realized that she had been told about waterboarding, she only looked surprised because of the Botox.
You had to get that in there, didn't you, John?
Yeah, I will. I have no problem. Listen, I have no problem talking about that. You're asking union guys to, you know, follow Nancy. And Nancy, you can't be the face of a movement when your face has no movement. But I give her a lot of credit because she is really holding Obama's feet to the fire. Mm-hmm. And I've been very impressed with how diligent she's been in crusading for the public option. She has not backed down one
right.
bit.
Unlike Harry Reid, who is being incredibly wishy-washy.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what does more, Harry Reid or the human appendix. I really can't find out.
I've never seen Harry Reid really get inflamed, so that's one difference.
I'm sorry you had to see me this outrage. I just don't understand how, like, this fall we're not going to get a public option, but we do get Saw 6. It doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
You know, but this is what Max gave us. Now, Max Baucus spent all these months crafting this bill with the Gang of Six, and they were going to do it. And all the time he was doing this, the insurance companies were funneling money to him. The guy's taken $3 million from the insurance companies, and pretty much he's introduced a bill that is designed to give billions of our tax dollars back to them.
Right. I'm sure that's a coincidence.
Oh, I'm sure, strictly. And, you know, this whole thing is like, it's a terrifying bill. It's like a Stephen King novel, and the insurance companies are rolling around in the whole thing, and I'm waiting to see if the Democrats will lead. If they're capable of leading, because we saw the president give a very, very passionate speech yesterday to a meeting of organized labor to the Teamsters, and which our previous Republican caller called a protest. And, you know, at this point, I think Max Baucus is so owned by insurance companies, he has to submit a claim if he wants to touch himself before bed. It's embarrassing. And I'm waiting to see, you know, who are the leaders going to be? Are these politicians work for us, folks? You know, they work for us. They're our employees. I've never heard of an organization where the employees get better benefits than the bosses.
Right.
But that's what we have right now. And if only all the people who got so politically engaged in an election last year would step up and do this. Where are the celebrities? You had celebrities throwing phones at their publicists to get a walk-on in a Will.i.am video for Obama. Why aren't they coming out now?
That's a great
point. I want to see all these people coming. I want to see the Christians come out. I want to see the seniors come out. And I want to see all the celebrities who couldn't wait to be photographed next to Obama step up now, especially the Canadian celebrities making a buck in this country, to tell the truth about how their health care system is better.
Mm-hmm.
When your Republican friends and loved ones tell you, it's socialism, it's European socialism, you got to say back to them, you name me one country with nationalized health care that has dropped that system in favor of a thing we have.
Kiefer Sutherland has come out in favor of single payer, much to the shock of 24 fans.
Yeah.
That Jack Bauer turns out to what?
What?
So you're socialized medicine?
Jack Bauer cares about people? Head blows up.
Now his grandfather actually created the single payer system in Canada.
Yeah.
You are very right.
Yep.
Well, God bless him for doing it. You know, that's really putting his fan base on the line in favor of what he thinks is right, and I think that's heroic.
Yep. Did you see how Max Baucus was by himself yesterday when he announced this thing that came out of his committee?
Yeah, where's Max's posse? Every time someone presents a bill, they've got their whole crew on stage with them. Max was all by himself.
There's no crew. Yep.
No crew. Here's a little of Max Baucus yesterday.
This is a good bill. This is a balanced bill. It can pass the Senate.
It's just a bill, and it's only a bill, and it's going to stay there on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. Well, it needs to be. His bill needs to be reconciled with Chris Dodd's bill, and all three bills in the House need to be reconciled, and then the reconciliations of those two, houses of Congress, then need to be reconciled before it goes to President Obama.
So by 2025, we'll be well on the way to having a plan
so
that might eventually.
Four out of the five bills have a public option. The only one that doesn't is Max Baucus's. So there is still a good chance that a public option will find its way to President Obama.
Well, I'm in favor of the calling him out for his hypocrisy and public option. But Max knows there's a lot of criticism of his plan. Let's play track two.
There are some who think I've not gone far enough. There are some on both sides of the aisle think I've gone too far.
Now, why can't we agree that it's gone too far and it hasn't gone far enough and Max should just go?
Yeah.
I mean, let's also give Max Baucus the credit, because he's the guy who made sure that having single payer was never even up for discussion as head of this committee.
Right.
Like, we didn't even get to talk about single payer, which is the system we really need.
Absolutely.
It's a good thing we've spent all that time placating the Republicans, because that's worked out like a what?
Huh? Well, exactly. Even Olympia Snow has dropped off.
Yeah, the supposed moderate.
Oh, well, they've been dangling Olympia Snow like a carrot to the Democrats for so long, and I know they want to say this bill is bipartisan, but to me, that's like Bush saying Iraq was a coalition, because it was us, England, and like three guys from Poland. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's just a big verbal stretch. And I get so pained when I see President Obama trying so hard to make the Republicans love him. It's like watching Whitney all those years with Bobby, It's like, oh, just exhale, Barry. Let it go. But we said before, Pelosi's kind of fighting back. Can we play a cut four?
Sure.
How can we give all of these new consumers to the health insurance industry with no accountability, no competition? And no real challenge for them to honor the reforms that we have in the bill.
Absolutely. It's mandating health insurance for everybody without giving the poorest among us a way to pay for it.
Exactly right. If you're a family of four making over $68,000, you're on your own, by the way, under Baucus's plan. It's
wow.
It's exactly. Vulgarity. But Chris, Obama's plan calls for the same thing. I hate to upset my Democratic friends, but Obama's plan requires every American to buy health insurance. So what he's talking about.
But it
about
also
is
gives them a mechanism
option.
To help to pay for it, even if it's just cheaper through a public option or through subsidies.
Absolutely. But what that's doing is taking our tax dollars to help the needy and funnel it back to the insurance companies that Obama's been telling us were the bad guys for the past year and a half.
Yeah.
And, that to me is a direct abdication of the public option, and that's why it's time to call these people out who call themselves capitalists. Because if you're this afraid of competition, you ain't no capitalist. If you're afraid of Canadian drugs, you ain't no capitalist. What do they always tell us? Competition is good. It keeps prices lower. That's what we're trying to do. Public option is a non-profit, and these guys, in my opinion, stopped being capitalists in the U.S. Congress when they began rewarding failure, like in the bailouts. They stopped being capitalists under Bush and Cheney when they had no-bid contracts for Iraq, and they just gave Iraq away to their friends instead of competitive bidding. And if these guys are going to cling so much to capitalism and demonize socialism, let's start calling them on their own logic. Anthony Weiner has become a real hero in my mind in this debate, another fine congressman from New York. Can we play his cut?
What we're saying to the United States Senate, to the Gang of Six, is thanks, but no thanks.
Good.
Your proposal will not pass muster here.
Good.
God bless him.
Yep.
I mean, this guy, to his credit, introduced a bill last month in the House that would ban Medicare. And he did it not because he wants to ban Medicare, but he wanted all these Republicans screaming about socialism to put their money where their mouth is and actually go up against it. And, God bless him. He may have a great career. And, his last name's Weiner, and I'm futile saying I have a soft spot in my heart for guys who keep their goofy last names.
Yeah, exactly.
It just means someone from Vienna is all I
mean. Wiener?
Yeah.
And futile saying means birdsong.
It does indeed. Actually, Kugelsang is a Navajo term for lactose intolerant. okay, Sean Hannity is very upset at Harry Reid.
Oh, what else is new?
Over the nuclear option.
Harry Reid, for the first time this week, said he will use the nuclear option. If he goes down that road, what will the reaction be, not only from Republicans, but from people in this country that are out there protesting at town halls, the March on Washington this weekend?
First off, they're going to react however you order them to react, Sean.
The same way they always react. Ah!
All right. We report how you'll decide.
Exactly. If you agree with us, even if you think we're full of crap, give us a call. 1-800-STEPH-12. That's 1-800-STEPH-12. We will take your calls right after this here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, God, that is so my humor.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Soak up Stephanie Miller.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Chris Lavoie. That is Jim Ward. And John Fugelsang is there in New York. We're filling in for Stephanie Miller, who is in Orlando giving a big speech to a big labor union convention.
Oh, tell the truth. She's chilling with Shamu.
She's drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she'll be back here tomorrow, though.
That's true, and I'm looking forward to hearing her back and her dulcet tones, and I've always enjoyed being on your show. I've been a regular here for a couple of years now, I think, and it's,
you have.
And lovely to fill in.
And we've loved having you.
Well, thank you. Today's show is dedicated to all of these senators with socialist health care, warning us of the dangers of socialist health care.
Yes, absolutely. Mick in Kentucky wants to talk about health care. Hey, Mick.
Hey, I'd just like to call in. You guys are doing pretty good today. I like the way you're all over the place. But, I mean, what
thanks.
What would be so hard about politicians getting up and, like, saying what you guys are saying? I mean, how do you argue against, like, cheaper health care to people? I mean, it just mystifies me right now. I mean, and they get up there and they give all these long-term speeches, this, that, and the other, and then start bringing up the illegal thing, you know. People that don't pay their bills don't pay their bills, but if it's all coming out of a little bit of taxes each week, out of a paycheck, $5 here, $10 there, you know. I mean, I work in an industry that's 29% workman's compensation. I'm pretty sure my boss would much rather pay about like 6 or 7%.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the fact is, the status quo
that,
is better organized. The status quo is always better organized, which is why any progress takes so long.
I mean, just stop the whole way. I mean, like, stop the insanity, that one blonde-haired woman used to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming from Susan Powder.
I don't want less bills.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
They like to pass a bill where you can buy drugs in Canada. Excuse me, that's government-subsidized drugs. I think the Canadian government should, like, have an objection against that one.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Subsidizing those drugs that you're coming over to buy.
Oh, yes. Well,
I can see why the Canadian government would have a problem with that.
Wouldn't you think, like, you know, if my citizens are paying taxes so they can have cheaper drugs, and these Americans are coming across the border to get cheaper drugs? Wait,
well, now, but hang on. We're the only thing keeping the Taliban from invading Canada, so keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. You have me there, yeah. You know,
without us, you're British.
You know, because it's close to Alaska.
Yeah.
Plus, right,
thanks for your call, Mick.
Sneaky Ruskies now getting across the Bering Strait now.
All right, thanks for your call, Mick.
See, I'm from my house.
Well, and I love Canada because there I appear to be tan. But he makes a very good point. But you know what? The status quo is always more organized. That's why they're the status quo. That's why it takes so long for any progress to happen. And that's why, you know, you won't see a lot of results in your lifetime, but you will see incremental changes. Yep. When Social Security was first passed against heavy Republican and conservative protests who said it was socialism, government employees weren't covered under it, and it took a long time to get that changed.
Absolutely. We'll be talking more health care with Representative Gregory Meeks from the great state of New York coming up next here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She's a jackass.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller is in Orlando giving a big speech to a big labor union convention. I'm here, Chris Lavoie, and Jim Ward is here.
Hello.
Right next to me in Los Angeles, and John Fugelsang is there in New York.
Indeed we are, and we do not define awesome as we feel. We redefine it every time we go on the air.
Absolutely. And on the Newsmaker Hotline, we got Representative Gregory Meeks from the great state of New York. How you doing, Congressman?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good.
It's a pleasure to have you here, Congressman. Thank you so much for giving of your time.
Well, it was good to be with you.
It's good to have someone from my city, and you are the congressman for the borough of Queens, and it's an honor to have you on. I want to talk to you about many, many things, but I want to start off with your thoughts on the bill that Max Baucus presented yesterday.
Well, in looking at it, again, what I think is going to happen, we need something to come out of the Senate so that we can get what we need to get out of the House. And then we can get to a conference committee and try to work out a bill that's going to change health care as we know it and make sure that it is something that works and that the president is for and will sign. And so it gives direction that we're not going to just, you know, sometimes the Senate has been known as the graveyard. Things die there, never get out of there. And at least I say that what the Baucus bill does, it gives us a working bill to discuss that's coming out of the Senate, as we've got a bill that will be coming out of the House shortly, and moves us a step closer to having health reform in the United States of America.
Do you feel that the public option is an integral component of health reform, or do you think that we're going to see the public option be discarded?
I think public option is absolutely key and crucial, and the president has said that also. And he said that absent a viable alternative to give insurance companies competition. And I have not seen or heard or in any way anything that had been proposed other than the public option that, in fact, gives a viable alternative. So, you know, the president, you know, has made that statement. I believe him. And so as we move forward, we want to make sure that, because the ultimate idea here is to make sure that the insurance companies have competition so that we can drive the cost down and make sure that more Americans, or just about every American, can afford a quality health care program.
Are you concerned that the president's plan might require people to purchase private health care insurance that would then be subsidized by the government, that in essence we're going to use taxpayer dollars to further enrich the coffers of the very insurance companies we're trying to reform?
Well, my focus is that we make sure that my real focus is that more Americans have health care. Health care should not be a privilege for the rich. It should be a right of all. And we are going to make sure that in every way possible, number one, we're going to pay for it. But number two, I believe that's why the public option is the way to go. That's why, you know, you'll see a strong voice and a strong bell that will come out of the House, which will show what we want. And I believe that the stronger the bill that comes out of the House, the more likely that we will have a public option in there, or at least from what, you know, some of the debate, I think could ultimately be, give states the choice of whether or not they want to go to public options and or an exchange program, et cetera. But I think that there will be a public option that will come out of the bill in some shape or form.
Congressman, are you surprised to see so many self-proclaimed capitalists so terrified of competition from a nonprofit? That's essentially what the public option would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, what you have is and basically the insurance industry, who has monopolies in various states. You can go to certain states like the state of Alabama, where there's virtually only one company with no competition. And so they're trying to preserve their monopoly. So those individuals who try to say that We're trying to move the system in, from a non, competitive system, but that's not the truth. We're going to just the opposite. We're creating competition. And if they are competing, I think that from the assessments of a number of individuals, you're still only talking about 5% of the member of the people in America in 10 years who would even be who would opt for the public option. So it's individuals who are just trying to come up with falsehoods because they do not want change in the healthcare system. They want to continue to make the profits they're currently making.
I think falsehoods is a very generous term to apply to what they've been saying.
That is correct. I'm trying to give it some, trying to be
diplomatic.
Diplomatic. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
I admire your civility, and I hope it rubs off on some people.
I agree with you.
Do the Democrats really think that Olympia Snowe is going to be the hero in this, that she's going to cross party lines and render this a bipartisan bill, or do you think it's going to come down to being a 50-50 vote?
So I think that, ultimately that's the Senate's headache, to be quite honest with you, but I think that Olympia Snowe, I know the president would love to have a Republican, but if you have won, the question is that's still a bipartisan vote. But to his credit, he is the president for all of the people, and so long as he keeps his line open, which I think he should, I think he said the right things in saying that if anybody has a serious proposal that they would like to bring forth to contribute, I'm ready to listen. In his state to us on the floor of the House a week or so ago, he talked about proposals that both sides, his opponents in the primary and his opponents in the presidential election. In fact, he was ready to accept one of the amendments that was given by Senator McCain. I think that's the right tone. The tone is, he said he was going to change Washington, D.C. He's not trying to do the same kinds of things or the same kind of rhetoric that another president who came in and said that he was going to be kinder and gentler, and we know what happened there. But if you don't have a proposal, and if your motive is only to prevent change in health care reform, then we're going to march on, and we'll march on with the votes that we have.
God bless you. What's the word you get in your district in New York City when you go home? Are you encountering resistance to this, or are people very engaged and supportive?
No, people are very engaged. In fact, sometimes I'm surprised that I held a town hall meeting like many of the others that were covered. I had just as many people there, close to 1,000 people like others, but it wasn't where people were yelling and screaming. It's where we did have a conversation, and the majority of individuals in there, I'd say a majority being 80-85%, wanted health reform, and they wanted the public option. In fact, some wanted one payer. And so there's a large voice out there that is diametrically opposed to what some of the cable news shows had presented over the month of August. As you can also see, as the president now goes around the country and he's having town hall meetings, you don't see the same kind of individuals. And I think that the individuals that were going from place to place, not necessarily living in a certain district, they have been exposed for who they are when they made the demonstration here in Washington, D.C., that Tea Party, and basically from Fox. That's not, I don't believe, the majority of Americans. It's a few who did not vote for Barack Obama in the first place and who are playing politics and trying to, make this, as a senator from the Republican Party said, a political vote or the Waterloo for Barack Obama. And they're not interested in health care at all because they're not asking any meaningful questions or not engaged in intellectual conversations about how we do reform the health care system.
Exactly. As a member, by the way, I'm very sorry that everyone behaved so well at your town hall meetings, or else you could have been on Fox News. I wanted to ask you, as a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, how you feel about Jimmy Carter's comments this week that a lot of the attacks we're seeing are based in racism.
Well, you know what? the and I understand the president's response, but the facts speak for themselves. When you see some of the depictions of what this Tea Party and others have been carrying around as far as depicting the President of the United States, when you see that they still questioning his citizenship, when you see the kind of slurs that they have that they've made, then there's no question as to what's sparking it on. But it, and I wish, you know, and I don't want people to think that that's the majority of Americans. It's not. I can tell you for sure that prior to President Obama, my office, and you can talk to various other members of the Congressional Black Caucus, when we in the past had even thought about going on Fox, and we did say we went on Fox, I can't tell you. I've got letters that you use some of the most vile language that you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Phone calls that would come into my office using every racial slur that you could imagine. Mm. So those are the individuals now who were hiding behind the cloak of a phone call or the telephones that now feel it is okay to come out in the open. But they've always been there. They're just coming from under the covers or the sheets of which they were hiding under. And so there is no question that there is truth in what President Carter said. That being said, President Obama cannot focus on that. He is the President of the United States, and he knows that day we lose if that's the issue that we continue to talk about, as opposed to staying focused on how we're going to reform health care for all Americans, on how we're going to reform the financial services industry so that we don't get in the economic problems we are, and how do we bring back this economy, creating more jobs. So he cannot afford, nor can we who are in Congress afford, to allow the dialogue to change from the issues that are relevant and important to the people of the United mm-hmm. States to make a difference in their lives.
Yes.
That being said, when the question is brought as you just did, we have to acknowledge the truth of the matter is, that is this, there is people in this country who are racist.
Amen. And I want to thank you for all you're doing to bring them out of the light, and what you're doing in the health care debate, and what you're doing for our veterans at the VA, by the way. I really appreciate you calling in today, Congressman. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Good being with you.
All right.
It's an honor. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, Congressman Meeks.
Gregory Meeks from the great state of New York.
Absolutely. And we need to take a break right now, but we'll be taking your phone calls next on what Congressman Meeks was saying. And also, we've got Tinsel Talk next with Jim Ward. I'll be right back here on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, I like it. I like it a lot.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Chris Lavoie. That is Jim Ward sitting right next to me here in Los Angeles. And John Fugelsang is there in New York, filling in for Stephanie Miller, who is in Orlando, giving a big speech to a labor union convention. She will be back tomorrow.
We are bi-coastal today, or maybe we're just confused.
Absolutely. Let's check some entertainment news, shall we?
There's no business like show business.
It's time for Tinsel Talk. Let's find out what's going on in Hollywood with Stephanie Miller.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If only she were.
Exactly. All right. Actor Russell Crowe is sorry over a rugby pub punch-up. Russell Crowe has apologized for a barroom brawl involving his Australian rugby league team. The actor, who has a history of violent outbursts, said that the fight rekindled uncomfortable memories of his own bad boy antics. And we got a little comment from Russell Crowe.
I'm shocked. Shocked to discover a drunken brawl broke out in a pub full of Australian rugby players. Who could have sussed that alcohol and testosterone would prove a highly combustible mixture, especially when members of opposing teams, one of which suffered a humiliating defeat, are present. Especially when accusations of marital infidelity on the part of the wives of said losing team with members of the winning team are thrown about. especially when allegations of the inadequacy of the losing team's sexual equipment is thrown into the mix. As I've said, I'm shocked, appalled and gobsmacked at this childish behaviour, and I apologise on behalf of my compatriots. Mostly, I apologise for not being there. Crikey, Dick, I love a good blue and a boozer. Must have been a beaut. I'll live to put the boot in and give a gobful to a shonky ockahoon, wacka wacka drongo, now have a yubba brown-eyed mullet. Ace, good on you, mates. I'm mad as a cut snake, I missed it. Chuck a phone for me, mates. Aussie, Aussie, oi, oi, oi.
And that does it for
I'm right. Thinking his apology was less than sincere.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Russell, real men throw phones at their enemies.
Wha-bam. And if you'd like more Jim Ward, falderall.
Jim Ward's apocryphal but true. Tile at stephanmiller.com. Go there, buy the album. Thank you.
Absolutely. All
brilliant
right.
Stuff.
Yeah. All right. We got some calls. You want to take some calls here, John?
Yeah, definitely. I have to forget about Russell Crowe because I spent a day watching his two-hour movie last week. State of Play.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take some calls. Who's out there?
Roz in Atlanta is on the line. She wants to talk about health care. Hey, Roz.
Oh, hello. Well, first of all, I don't know why anyone isn't explaining the liability that private insurance companies are going to assume if they have to cover all of a sudden millions of people with pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I can explain, and I work with actuaries for over 20 years, it's the private insurance company's role as far as profit goes in the health care. It's like going down to New Orleans 2 days after Katrina and trying to insure everybody with flood insurance. These insurance companies are going to have an enormous profit from the taxpayers to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Exactly. And it seems that they're going to be getting it. We saw insurance company stocks rise yesterday as soon as the Baucus bill was released.
Yep, absolutely. Frank in Los Angeles on healthcare. How you doing, Frank?
Unless you make these insurance companies non-profit, then you're not going to bring down the cost. Reagan deregulated them and made them for profit. The point is that in 2006, William McGuire made $1.7 billion, and the new CEO of United Healthcare this year is going to make about $700 million. So how many thousands of people are being denied treatment because of their salaries?
True, but if you had a public option, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, that you need a single payer, like Medicare, like Tom Hartman said, Medicare E. And Medicare operates on 3% cost, and the private health insurance are skimming off at 30%. So, I mean, it doesn't take you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out the difference in costs and where the money's going. The money's not going to treatment, it's going to the salaries of the CEOs who are I think some of these agents are getting a commission for every person that they deny treatment to.
Absolutely, but the point of the public option is to provide that competition, to have a nonprofit out there so people can opt into that and the prices can go down.
The law is saying that they're nonprofit. They're still going to make a profit, and that I don't know what that profit could be, 20%. That's still too much. Are we going to pay the salaries of the doing nothing?
Well, I think you make an excellent point, but I do think the point of the public option is that it's going to drive costs down because they'll have to compete with something.
Yep, absolutely. Stevie in Los Angeles. On Kanye and Serena Williams. Hey,
Word,
Stevie.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Good morning, gentlemen. You're doing an excellent job. Awesome job, man. I'm speaking from the black perspective, baby, and I got to say, you know what? It is a whole lot of racism going on with this situation. I ain't got nothing to lose, so I can speak on it like, you know what I'm saying, there really is. When I was looking at that thing about the boy got arrested for killing that girl recently, stuffing her in the wall, his name sounded like a black name, and I was like, oh, God, I waited on bated breath when they announced it to see what he looked like. But Kanye West blow up and Serena Williams blow up, boy, the black people is looking bad in the media.
Yeah, because the Caucasians are behaving so well, right?
Yeah, like Representative Joe Wilson. Uh-huh.
You lie.
Bill Wilson is just terrible, man.
Yeah.
But I just speak from my own perspective of what I saw. I was like, Dazam!
Yeah. All right, Stevie, thanks. Josh in Missoula, Montana. How you doing, Josh?
Great. Max is my senator. And
Max Baucus, yes.
The only thing that he's insured with this plan that he's just put out is higher profits for the insurance companies subsidized by the government and me working to unseat him during the next election cycle.
God bless
and
you.
Well, let's just make sure
other Montanans.
Let's just make sure we don't replace him with a Republican.
Right, and if we can't replace him, he's going to end up being the Strom Thurmond of the Senate, you know, like... Mm-hmm. 20 years from now, they'll look back and say, oh, this is Max. He's the one that didn't support the equivalent of the Civil Rights Bill, you know?
Yeah,
and so
all right.
Here's to his
exactly.
not-so-great future in the Senate, I hope.
Well, I appreciate you couching it in a moral context, because I think that's exactly the way to go if you're going to be fighting these people. I mean, I know that the insurance companies have had it really tough for a long time, and the uninsured have been rolling around, living it up, but it's time to balance the scales a bit.
Exactly. John Fugelsang, it has been great co-hosting the show with you today.
It has been such a pleasure, and I invite all your viewers to come say hello to me on Twitter or Facebook. I'm the only John Fugelsang you'll find there. And,
or anywhere.
Gentlemen, I would rather be working with you than with the best radio show in all of radio. I can't say it enough.
Well, thank you, John.
Chris Lavoie and Jim Ward, what talent. And I've just missed Stephanie Miller all day, but you'll get her back tomorrow.
Exactly. All right. See you tomorrow here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Peace.